Hello and welcome. It's time for another edition of Coffee Talk, where we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. My name is Trevor Huth, and my co-host, as always, is Nate, the Great Kosher. Nate, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. As I woke up this morning, I actually forgot it was Monday, so I'm glad I remembered. Holiday weekend throws you for a loop.
Those holidays will get you. My school year just ended, so I'm on summer break, so I'm still well aware it's Monday, but that'll go away pretty soon, I'm sure.
Yes, hopefully, right?
Well, it's not just Monday, Nate. It's a very unfortunate Monday, because it's the Monday right after Ronald Acuna Jr. goes down for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
You hate to see it. It's another knee thing. It's an ACL.
So he... obviously, last year was the MVP, but when was he hurt? Was it the prior season when he missed time?
I believe it was.
Do you remember that?
But it was I know it was the other knee. It's not the same knee. This is the other knee.
Okay. So, yeah, definitely don't want to see this. I mean, probably the best player in baseball when he's healthy and one of the biggest stars fantasy-wise and just, you know, in real life also. So it sucks. I saw right away he said he didn't think it was anything as serious as his prior injuries initially, but then they must have run some tests and found out, yes, he did tear his ACL, left knee.
Yeah, that's super unfortunate. I mean, what you would hate to see is two knee surgeries that make this young superstar who can do everything limit him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because speed is such a big part of his game, and it's going to be rough. But he did it once with his other knee. But now, if you're going to be on two surgically repaired knees or two knees that have gone through some significant injury, that can really potentially tear away at some of the things that makes Ronald Acuna such a stud, especially on the fantasy side when you're looking at what his speed can do for you. And it's scary.
Yeah, I was just looking at his numbers so far this season. He wasn't having quite. I mean, last year, I don't think.
Like one of the best seasons ever. He's not repeating it.
Yeah, I was just about to say, he doesn't have last year's numbers, but that's not really even a fair comparison. But I mean, he's still doing well, but his average is only 250, but he has 16 steals already. I mean, he had the counting stats, but not quite the season, even if you look prior years. But it sucks. Prime of his career, right? I mean, the Braves will still be okay without him because they're so stacked. But
they're the Braves. They'll call up some dude from rookie ball, and he's going to be the next superstar. That's how they operate.
They will miss him, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I'm just kidding. You cannot replace Ronald Acuna Jr. And all the speculation about his legs, there's no point in that. I know I did it, but don't do that. I don't know why I did, honestly. There's no point in it because you don't know till you know. That's a lesson I learned writing scouting reports. Jordan Lawler, I think we talked about this. Mm-hmm. I turned in a Jordan Lawler report it was the highest grading I've ever done for a player. I was super in. Jordan Lawler's going to be amazing. An hour after his first injury happens, like that first big injury that kept him out for a year. And I'm just reaching out to some people. I'm like, what do I do? Because I just turned this in. Like, do I change it? They go, well, you can't really change it because you don't know what he looks like after the injury. And since then, I've kind of adopted that mindset where I know that I was kind of speculating on what might happen, with two knees like that. But there's almost no point because he could come back and be everything he was before. He could be better. You just don't know.
True. Very true. And the advances in medicine and science, people can go through multiple ACL tears and still have an okay career. So
hopefully. Yeah, I mean, he's probably still going to be faster and more athletic than me, and I don't even have a torn ACL. So,
likewise,
my ACLs aren't that athletic, though, to be fair. So last week we talked about former Tiger legend, current Rays, I don't know, budding superstar, probably not, Tyler Alexander. I had said that he took, did I say perfect or a no hitter? I think I might have meant perfect game, but it was the longest bit of something. He took into the seventh inning.
Yes, but that's not, I believe, true.
It's not, yeah.
Our conversation was a no hitter because we were saying we were surprised there hadn't been a no hitter. And then one of our listeners pointed out, we did not know what we were talking about.
I think I might have meant perfect game. I don't know. I saw it somewhere.
That would make more sense.
Always appreciate the listeners keeping us honest. But there's a correction to be made here. If I did say no hitter, and my bad.
Thank you to at Sports Newman, who said Matt Garza threw a no hitter for the Rays in 2010. He was actually, I looked this up then, July 26, 2010. He was one walk away from a perfect game. So he was close. And I actually had kind of forgotten about Matt Garza, but he was pretty good. He was on the Twins for a while. He faced the minimum 27 batters, and he had one walk, as I said.
He was good for a while. I mean,
he was, yeah.
Even when he went over to the Cubs, he was good for a while longer, too. If I remember correctly, I guess maybe not. I just remember him being on the Cubs, which means he probably did something.
I want to say he was a quality starter, you know, for a number of years. Let's see. Yeah, I'm sure. ALCS 2008 ALCS MVP.
He was there during that run of Rays pitching when it was like David Price, mm-hmm. Matt Garza, and I'm sure there were others I'm not forgetting. I just remember David Price and Matt Garza, I think, were the two big names around that time.
He ended up with the Brewers toward the end of his career. But yeah, he had a couple of nice years with the Cubs, probably the best seasons of his career with the Rays, 2008 to 2010. Oh, I guess he left after the no-hitter. Anyway, so thank you, yes, to our listeners.
Yes, thank you. And I did look it up. It was a perfect game bid. So we just misspoke. He took the perfect game bid into the eighth inning before surrendering it. So he completed seven with that perfect game bid, and that would be the longest in Rays history to my knowledge, or according to what I'm seeing. So
that would make more sense with the Rays not being around that long, that they haven't had a perfect game.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I want to do now is I literally minutes before we started texted a clip to Nate and said, hey, I want to talk about this guy. He's not a coffee talk guy, so I think I want to get him out of the way now. Sure. I think that makes the most sense, Nate. So in low A right now for the St. Louis Cardinals is a guy whose name I'm just probably going to botch, and I apologize, but Ettore Gianlianelli. I think that's as close as I'm going to get. He has a super weird release. It's kind of been going around. Pitching Ninja picked it up and said he was glitching. It's that super, like, way over the top delivery, I think, is what's getting people, on top of the fact that he also has a screwball. And again, I know it's not a coffee talk guy because he's not going to be in the majors this year, but it's just fun baseball and it's super interesting looking. And Nate, I don't know if you've seen any more than just the clip I sent, but it's crazy, right?
Yeah, I was just rewatching it. It shows three different batters, looks like the same game, and they're all kind of shaking their heads and laughing, like, how am I supposed to hit that? But yeah, he's a right-hander, goes kind of strong toward the left, but then his arm is almost like vertically above his head when he releases the ball. It's very odd.
If you're trying to picture the delivery just based on our words, picture Oliver Drake, if you remember Oliver Drake. Because he had to kind of clear his whole body out of the way to come straight over the top. And I don't know if the stuff is so nasty, or if the hitters are just like, how am I supposed to pick this up? Because if you think about it, when you're trying to pick up a pitch, usually as a hitter, you're going, you know, a standard arm slot, three quarters, somewhere off to the side of the body. But for this dude, Gianlianelli, or I again apologize if I'm mispronouncing his name.
Let's call him EG.
EG, yeah. When you're looking at EG's release point, it's like straight up above where his head used to be at before he had to clear it out so he could pitch.
It actually looks, I would say it looks more smooth than Drake's.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't look, I guess, as Drake just didn't look smoother. It looked almost,
it's
like,
it's not as compartmentalized. With Drake, you could almost see the different parts of his delivery. He'd almost stop at each position you're taught, yes, and, exactly. And EG does not.
Very interesting. Yeah. We'll have to see what he does.
Yeah, so a little more information. He is 21 years old. Again, he's with the Cardinals. He's in Palm Beach right now. And I guess the Cardinals signed him in 2019. So he's been around a while. He just hasn't really played at all. He has played. He has 47 games professionally, but nothing as crazy as this year. This year, he has 12.2 innings, 21 strikeouts, although his whip is over 2, and his ERA is over 4. So
walks could be an issue.
Right. So I'm not thinking this is a guy who's going to like blaze through the minors or anything, and he might not be a guy who sees the light of day, to be honest, but it's just a funky delivery, and you know, I'd recommend looking him up. Good luck spelling his name.
fun to watch at the very least.
But Pitching Ninja's Twitter has it, and it's super fun. Again, he's got a screwball, so you never know. This could be the next Devin Williams that just kind of pops up one year and has this insane pitch that nobody can hit. Or he could be like Oliver Drake, who bounces around the league. I remember writing about Oliver Drake as just like trying to be funny, like haha. I don't know if it came off that way, but he got DFA'd so many times. I don't know if you remember that. There was a time when Oliver Drake was getting DFA'd like twice a week, it seemed like.
I was just looking him up here. Now he ended with the Rays. That's what I thought. Oh yeah, he all over the place. Look at 2018. He played for the Brewers, the now Guardians, the Angels, the Blue Jays, and the Twins. One season.
Right. And then after that season, still, he goes from he was selected off waivers by the Rays, the Jays. Like, he was all over the place. He was getting DFA'd like nobody's business. They'd have him on the team for a little bit, and then they'd need to clear space. And like, okay, see ya. I can't imagine that was a fun life for him.
No. His numbers are very up and down because he doesn't have very many games with one team, but his career numbers, not terrible. I mean, I'd say pedestrian. He pitched over 200 innings in his career, 4.27 ERA.
Well, and you know,
very odd.
Pedestrian or not, it was at its baseline, it was useful, right? Teams could continue to use Oliver Drake. That's why he kept getting the chances. I know we think of a guy getting DFA'd and having to move around a lot. Like it you can get caught in this in between. But to a degree, if it keeps happening, that means you have value. You're just not in the right spot yet, or you just keep finding yourself in this precarious situation where there's a prospect or somebody, you know, who's getting paid a lot of money coming off the injured list or whatever, and they need the roster spot. But the fact that you keep finding another one means, you know, he was a valuable player.
The talent was always there.
Yeah.
That's what people can see.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes it just doesn't fit with that team. There's one guy who's not bounced around, but he hasn't fit with a team yet. He's with the Brewers right now. I told you I wanted to talk about him because I can't give up on the idea that something is there. Before I say who the player is, he's played for the Rays, or he was in the Rays organization, Cleveland, and Milwaukee. Those are three really, really smart organizations when it comes to pitching, and all of them have been interested in Tobias Myers at some point. Also, I believe Tobias Myers was traded for Junior Caminero, just saying. But they all see something in him and they keep wanting to make it work. And I keep wanting it to work, even though it hasn't yet. He's in the rotation right now for the Brewers. And I know his last outing as of the time we're recording this, I'm pretty sure was decent. He just came off the injured list, but
it was.
There are just some guys who you can't give up on. And for me right now, this season, specifically this season, it's Tobias Myers. I want something to happen because there's been so many smart pitching organizations wanting to take a chance on
him. We recorded this on Monday, as we said in the beginning. He pitched yesterday. He started against the Red Sox. He went 4.1 innings, gave up 6 hits, 1 earned run, struck out 4, and the Brewers lost 2-1, but kept them in the game. Didn't give up many mistakes, and his numbers are not bad actually with the Brewers.
So it's just those guys are interesting, and there seems to be a billion of them where no matter what, you can't give up on them because they're just something could happen. I know for me, for a long time as a prospect, I was always like, Buddy Reed's going to break out. It's going to happen at some point. I don't know why that was the guy that clung in my head, but Buddy Reed was going to break out always. And there's just those guys you can't give up. I think Byron Buxton will forever be one of those guys for me.
Yeah. Never totally put it together, but man. Well,
his was injury. So it's talent. Not even, you know, it's
yeah.
Not even like yeah, you're see right. Something there, but I don't know. Do you have any guys like that, Nate?
Well, it's funny you're thinking about the Brewers. I don't know why this popped in my head, but do you remember Ben Sheets?
Oh, yeah.
Some dark days for the Brewers, you know, early 2000s. They weren't very good, but he was a stud. And then I believe he pitched for USA Baseball. But again, injuries. I had a friend that used to call him Ben Hospital Sheets because he got hurt so much. But when he put it together, he was very good. And I forgot about this. He made a comeback with the Braves in 2012, and he started 9 games, went 4-4 after leaving the Brewers in 2008. But that's the guy that just popped into my head about. I mean, I don't even think eventually he could have been considered a top prospect. I mean, he's a 4-time All-Star, but he was not consistent, I guess, because he was always getting hurt. If there's a guy, like, if he had put it all together and he retired at age 33, if he had remained healthy, you know, he could have been someone who probably put up 200 wins.
Potentially. I mean, yeah, he was,
you know,
he was like right at the beginning of my baseball fandom. So I remember him. I don't remember a ton about him. I remember like getting to use him in video games, but that's about all I got for you.
Yeah. It was when the Brewers weren't very good. It's about all they had going for them.
It's like him and Ricky Weeks and, oh my gosh, there's going to be another name that pops into my head randomly in this podcast. I'm just going to scream it out. Cause I can't remember Hardy, right now.
Prince
JJ Taylor. Hardy was there. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And do you know, here's a fun fact.
Bill Hall. Name I was going for.
Yes. He had one great season. I remember I think he hit over 30 home runs. Now my fun fact, I can't remember who I'm talking about. Gosh.
I am so sorry.
I hate
while you're doing that, since we're talking about Brewers pitchers.
Okay, you keep going. I gotta
find just, I'm just I'm scrolling through, you know, scores as we're talking, you know, scrolling through all that. Robert Gasser, who we've talked about. I mean,
yes.
Today, his performance, dude, 6 innings, 3 hits, no walks, shutout innings, I should say, 7 strikeouts. I mean,
he's had a couple of good starts. Yeah, I remember we had the conversation about whether or not someone to pick up did he have the stuff to be successful?
Yeah, well, ERA is sub 2, so you probably missed it if you didn't jump at it.
And yeah, I mean, very good.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. Fantastic.
How many starts does it say he's had there?
I think this is 4 or 5, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, he's had a few really good ones and a few okay ones. I don't think he's got, you know, I don't think he's had a clunker yet, which everyone's due for a clunker at some point. I was just looking at Zach Wheeler. He had a clunker recently. So this was his 4th start, and he's been pretty good. I guess you could consider his last one. I mean, his last one, he gave up 10 hits, 4 runs across 6 innings against Miami, who's not that great of a lineup. But
I knew there was one that, yeah, he hadn't been at sharp. All the other ones, I think he's been.
Yeah, if you take away that Miami outing and I know that's not how baseball works, but you take away that Miami outing and you add in this one and his last two, let's see, he threw 6 today. So that would give him 17 innings and he's given up 2 runs in those starts.
Ooh, that's good.
And that would be 17 strikeouts in those innings.
Okay, Trevor, I thought of my fun fact. Back to the Brewers. 2005.
We're still on the Brewers, man.
You're right. Back in the time machine of the Brewers. Here's my fun fact. Nelson Cruz, way back when, wasn't with the Brewers, and they traded him to the Rangers. And then he went on. You know, he was a late starter and late bloomer, as everyone knows. But I remember my friend, same friend, he was a big Brewers fan, saying, oh, I wish we hadn't given up. He did not want Nelson Cruz to be traded, and that's looking like a smart decision, you know, 20 years later.
What was the trade? Do you have that?
I do not have that. I should.
Okay, well, Nate's going to look that up while he does. We're going to take a quick timeout here from our sponsors. Want to thank you for listening. We got more coming up here on Coffee Talk, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, where we're always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. I'm joined by Nate Kosher. Nate was giving us a fun fact about Nelson Cruz. I wanted to know who he got traded for when he got traded to the Rangers. And I think that's where we're going to pick things up here on the other end of our ad break. Nate, do you have the trade?
Yes. Wow. This was not fair. I didn't remember this. The Rangers and Brewers traded at the 2006 MLB trade deadline. They received Nelson Cruz and Carlos Lee. Remember Carlos Lee?
Carlos Lee. That he was trade. A player. Okay.
He was a player in his own right. The best that came back to the Brewers was Francisco Cordero, who was a closer. Pitcher? Yes, yeah. He was a pitcher. He was an all-star in 2007. He had 44 saves. And then another person, maybe you remember, heard of Lance Nix in the trade. That's the only other guy I remember, but a package.
Lance Nix, outfielder, correct?
I think so.
Yeah.
But Carlos Lee was good in his own right. Yeah, so then that was a ripoff trade if you think of how that turned out. I mean, I think Lee was an all-star a few times. He was good.
I remember Lee being like the dude on the Astros in the video games I was playing. And the Astros.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a really good player. So anyways, that's enough of the Brewers time machine, but
yeah. So we'll try a different team now. I think that would be good, but I'm going to stick with the theme of trades. I'm glad you brought that up. In January of 2023, the Philadelphia Phillies and the Detroit Tigers struck up a trade. And in that trade, Gregory Soto and Cody Clemens went to Philadelphia for Matt Vierling, Nick Maton, and Donnie Sands. And just what would be the other day when this podcast drops on Sunday, I watched Matt Vierling hit a walk-off home run. I'm super excited about it. Want to talk about it on the podcast, not only because that was fun to watch and it was a great game. I mean, they went and it was against the Blue Jays. It was a fantastic game to watch. But over his last seven games, Matt Vierling is hitting .364 with as many strikeouts as walks and two home runs.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty good. I just Googled. It looks like they were also wearing their new City Connects.
They were. Oh, yeah. I love those City Connects. Sharp. I do. Yeah. I really do. I don't even think the hat looked that weird in the scheme of the game.
Now that I've seen them more, and actually it was the Phillies, I think, their City Connects just – no, it was the Cardinals, sorry. The Cardinals City Connects just came out, and it just says, like, the Lou.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
it just doesn't look right because the Cardinals are so classic. Like, it's one of those teams. It looks weird.
And they didn't use the City Connect like other teams did to, like, do something different and be off-brand. Right. They basically made Cardinal jerseys.
Maybe that's what it was, yeah.
Like, it was similar font. It just said the Lou instead of St. Louis. Like, I mean, they tend to stick with – excuse me. They tend to stick with classic stuff, so I get it. But I don't know. I kind of wanted more out of it.
Yeah, I agree. But, yeah, Matt Vierling, nice little run he's put together. Someone who's probably available.
In most leagues, I would imagine.
Yeah, in many leagues. And maybe if you need some help in the power department, strikeouts probably still a concern, but he's playing well.
Yeah, I mean, even on the season, he's hitting .278. So he's on kind of a hot streak right now. So he's one of those, if you have somebody hurt, you need to fill an outfield spot, he might be a guy to go look at. I just don't know about extended run for him and if he's going to be worth it in the long run. But
maybe a plug and play for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah, one of those guys that you just have and you know that you could give him up when you need to. You could try to trade him out for somebody else who gets hot or whatever, but I mean, he's been on quite a tear.
Well, I always have kind of a theory, you know, where on your team in a redraft league, you want to leave at least one, maybe two slots open just for hot players. You know, be able to be okay with not filling your team and making no moves, but keeping a couple of spots where you can cycle through people who are just on a hot streak.
So, Nate, do you draft that way?
Well, not necessarily. I guess that depends. I would say the way I draft would be toward the end of the draft, you know, you're really looking for upside. So I would draft upside late, knowing I'll try to fill those slots if these young guys don't debut early enough. Then the last couple slots I would get for the hot free agents, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and here's the difference in strategies. I go for the upside early because I feel like that's where you're going to get the highest upside guys. And I know that floors probably help you win more often. I will admit that freely. But if I can find the right combination of high upside at the top part of the draft, I feel like I'm going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, the ceiling is probably higher.
And so when I... I mean, I'm talking like, you know, in the first round, you take this like super risky guy. I'm talking when you get to the fifth ish round, sure. Right? Those first four, you take the guys who are going to set the table for you.
Yeah.
And then I want my middle to kind of have that upside to where when, if they hit, I'm going to do good things that year. And I know that's hugely risky, but with that, that means I'm putting my, I only do that because I feel like there are just some consistent contributors you can find at the end of drafts because they're just not the hot commodity at that point.
Right. Yeah. They're boring. There's people that you draft and it's not really that exciting and well,
but it gets the job done.
Yeah, exactly. It's less risk, mm-hmm. but the ceiling is not as high. It's not as exciting. Like I would say Jose Abreu before this season, someone like that. You know, like, oh,
yeah. 30 home runs. Oh, my gosh. You would think Jose Abreu would be helpful. You'd think Paul Goldschmidt would be helpful.
Yeah, right. People like that where. Right.
Yeah, but.
It's not the Acunas of the world. But anyways, yeah, that's interesting.
That makes it harder for me to keep that roster spot open. I always like to and I always try to. I think the way I see it based on how I draft is because I agree with you. You always need that spot, those couple of spots that you can just churn, because eventually you'll find something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for me, those come with injury. And that's when I start to get those spots where I can churn. Because I feel like in the draft, I want to get the guys that I want to win with. Unfortunately, injuries don't quite care about that. So totally I wish they did. I wish I could talk to them, but they don't care. They're just going to hurt guys. So when that happens, that's when I'm like, all right, I'm going to put this player on the IL and what's available? Like who's the hot guy right now that I could, I mean, it's worked for me in the past. I wish I had a baseball example at the top of my head. For some reason, the only example I have in the top of my head is that year that Jay Ajayi broke out for the Miami Dolphins.
I do remember that.
I was like waiver wire first there. There are baseball examples too. Honestly, in the one of the last, my most impressive win was during the 2020 year with in an industry league that was dubbed Experts, and somehow I was there. I have no idea how. Nice. It was Ray Butler, Prospects 365, and I won the league. And the best move I made was getting. I'm not going to remember his name now. He was with the Mariners at the time. He was a high upside outfielder who had a really, really good year in the shortened COVID year and then kind of just fell off.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Kyle Lewis?
Kyle Lewis, yeah. And I had him and a couple others who just really hit that year, and I was able to win. And then after that year, the league shut down. But,
Matt Carpenter. Yeah. I was going to throw out Matt Carpenter. Remember, he got signed and went on a tear. I mean, he was good earlier in his career, but something like that is what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. And that's all to say that that's probably not Matt Vierling, but if you have that spot you're churning through, then a Matt Vierling is a guy you might want to pick up. Another guy you might want to pick up who has been on a torrid pace. And it makes me sound so stupid because I remember a week ago saying, I really don't know what Ryan Weathers is doing because where's Max Meyer? Do you know what Ryan Weathers is doing, Nate?
I didn't. I
didn't either, but I know now. I know now. Trust me. And just for our listeners, I know that you want me to know all this wonderful information. Sometimes I just don't know. And if I don't know, I make a note of it and I go look it up. And I immediately felt stupid when I looked this up after we recorded last week. Ryan Weathers is on this insane pace. His last three starts, 21 innings. I mean, he's giving up maybe one or two runs at most. It's something stupid. He's on a pace right now.
And to be fair to us, there's many, many, many baseball players, and it's impossible to follow them all. So disclaimer. But yeah, I didn't see that either. And actually, the Marlins were playing the D-backs, and they beat them yesterday to win the series. But Ryan Weathers is interesting because I feel like he was good, or he had some success in the majors, and then he went back down and was in the minors. Do you remember what I'm talking about? It was
So he was. I know he was a prospect with the Padres.
Yeah, it was when he was with the Padres.
Right. So he was a first round pick with the Padres and never really lived up to what people thought he was going to be. He was a guy who had pedigree. His dad, if you remember, is David Weathers.
I did not remember.
He kind of had that pitching pedigree. He was drafted out of high school, and he's still just 24 years old. That's the thing. So he was drafted in the first round, in 2018. And so he did have, like, he was up and down for a few years, starting in 2021 with the Padres, and never really put it together. I mean, he didn't have an ERA below 6 in any of his seasons there. Comes over to Miami in 2023. He was, I believe, traded there. Yeah, it was him for Sean Reynolds and Garrett Cooper was the trade. And then he was with Miami for 2023 for 13 innings and had a 7.62 ERA. And he's come back this year. And I think the reason that he stuck out in my head as somebody who, why isn't Max Meyer up, because Ryan Weathers is in the rotation, is because he was a reliever. He's supposed to be a relief guy.
Right. Yes.
By all accounts. And they have him starting. And apparently they know more than us because it's going pretty well.
It is. And, you know, this could be, as you said, he's only 24 years old. The past few years, he's figuring things out. He could make, I mean, I think he could make it as a starter. He's young enough and he's had some success now. This could continue, I guess, is what I'm saying. I could see him doing well and this moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I had mentioned his last three starts. Over his last 21 innings, he's given up one earned run, two total runs. He's walked 4, and he's struck out 19 in those 21 innings, and that's just his last three starts. Before that, he gave up 3 earned runs in each of the starts going 6 innings, but, you know, he's against the Dodgers for one of them, and he held his own, struck out 3. He's against Oakland, struck out 5. So he's on this run of just solid, solid outings.
Yeah, he was really good in most recently when they beat the Diamondbacks. So that's someone I would try to pick up.
Yeah, especially if he's available. If he's not, then you might have missed your chance, because I think if you're trying to trade for him, and Nate, maybe you think differently, but I think if you're trying to trade for him, his price is going to be a little too high right now.
Yes, I would agree. If whoever does have him, they're probably going to drive a hard bargain or might not even want to give him up. If he's on the waiver wire, I would go get him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And just to point this out, Ryan Weathers was the cover pitcher for this week's expected starting pitching article, just because of how crazy he's been. I messaged Aaron Polker, who does the graphics for it, and I'm like, here's a few options. I gave him a few names, and he goes, yeah, let's go with Ryan Weathers because of how phenomenal he's been. So it's just, you know,
there you go.
It's just great. It's just great. Nate, I'm going to move on to one more pitcher before we hit this break, because he's a guy we've talked about quite a bit, and he's definitely not on the notes. So sorry. The audience has to feel bad for
that's
you. This happens quite a bit with me. Alek Manoah. Yes. Did you see his last outing?
Well, I don't know now if he's had a good one or a bad one. I saw he had a really great one, and now I don't know if that was a long enough time ago for him to do badly. But what was his last outing?
He came out with a clunker when he got pulled up, and then he had these phenomenal outings, and he just, I mean, he got hit around in his last outing. So he's kind of, again, it's a mystery. Like, there's no way to tell if he's going to be good or bad. It seems like there's no in between. You know, just looking back at his game log, his first outing at the beginning of May went four innings, gave up six runs, walked four. And then he had these two back-to-back seven-inning shutout starts where he walked a combined two. And then again, he was four strikeouts, gave up four runs, four earned runs, rather, six total runs against Detroit. It's like, what do you do with Alek Manoah?
I have no idea. I think, and we need to make perhaps a pitcher list glossary term, someone who is very inconsistent, we call it the Alek Manoah. Because he, I don't know what's up. I mean, it's, once again, not super old. He's 26 years old. You would look at those last two starts of some inning and say, oh, he's back, he's an ace. And then it's got to be, there's got to be a mental side to it, I would think, with it swinging, you know, so wildly one way or the other. Because if his, you know, mechanics, he's tweaking things, it wouldn't be so drastic, I wouldn't think, from having two shutouts to then, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean,
No,
I understand what you're saying. Alek Manoah, I want to make sure I'm going to give you the right player here. He kind of reminds me of Mark Reynolds, who was a hitter. But Mark Reynolds, I think, is the first player that was used for me to describe feast or famine.
Okay. Yeah, there we go. That's, yeah.
I know it was a long walk to get there, but that's kind of
what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's kind of like he's either going to be really good or really bad, and your guess is as good as mine.
I remember Reynolds, he had some power. But yeah, almost a Joey Gallo, not quite that extreme, but yeah, he had some strikeouts. I recall that.
He did. And again, obviously I know that pitchers and hitters are different things, which is a good place to start for baseball, but it's just that mindset of like, as a fantasy manager, what do you do? I mean, I doubt that many people are banking on Alek Manoah to win them a league, just like they probably weren't banking on Mark Reynolds. But if you're going to have him on your roster, you're going to want to use him at some point. So, I mean, you can't even really play matchups because the clunker from Manoah was against Detroit. It was supposed to be a fairly easy matchup for him.
That's what I was just going to check who they were playing. So,
and his good outings were against, well, Tampa Bay, according to Nick's rankings, projects as an easy outcome. But Minnesota, he had a good, you know, he had a good game against, and they're a higher end offense.
Right. Yeah. So, I was thinking along the same lines, but I don't think there is rhyme or reason. I think he's done enough now to stay at the major league level in the Rays rotation, you know, unless the next few weeks the wheels come completely off. But they've seen enough with those two good outings. They probably hope it continues.
Well, and it's not like we're talking about a guy who they've never seen before, because Manoah almost won a Cy Young for the Blue Jays.
I know. He was really good. His first couple of years, that might be someone you would have thought, this is one of the best young pitchers in baseball.
Yeah, a lot of people did think that. His price tag was huge. I sold him off. I mean, in the leagues, in my dynasty league, I sold. Yeah. Not because I didn't think I didn't know this was going to happen.
You probably got a lot back.
I just thought he's coming off this phenomenal season. He's only done it once. And in my head, that means, let me try to max out value if I can, unless I truly believe in the player. But yeah, I mean, it's hard. He's not going to get sent down because of one bad outing, right? He's going to have a chance to improve, but this is not two clunkers and two really, really good outings. The problem is there's been no in between. And I think the in between is where you want to see where he settles in. But I mean, how can you?
It's very odd. I agree. Yeah.
So our professional advice with Alek Manoah is, who knows?
Your guess is as good as ours. How about that?
I think that's a great time to take a timeout. We will be right back with more Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Don't forget, on Coffee Talk, we are always ready for that next cup of coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Talk on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. My name is Trevor Huth. I'm joined by Nate Kosher. Tell you what, Nate, we've been talking a lot about pitching on this episode. It's kind of been what's taken over. So what do you say we talk about a couple hitters?
Let's do that.
Okay. I know how much you love the Brewers, so let's go back to the Brewers. Joey Ortiz has been hitting pretty well.
He has. And yeah, at the beginning, I didn't think this was going to be so Brewer-centric, but here we are. Yeah, Joey Ortiz on the season, slashing .285, .379, .504. He has 5 home runs and 18 ribbies, and he just had a nice game here recently against the Red Sox. I just put this in the document. A lot of these games, I guess, just happened over the weekend that we're talking about. But he hit a 2-run double as the Brewers beat the Red Sox 6-3 on Saturday. But for the season, Ortiz, as I said, his season numbers, .285 with 5 home runs. And the reason I put him on here, which is interesting, he has eligibility potentially at third, second, and shortstop. And so, look, you know, your definite utility infielder that you could plug in and play in a number of different places, people like that is also someone I would look at in those last couple of roster spots, a guy like this, where their value can be the multi-position eligibility.
Yeah, and when you're talking about Ortiz, because we've talked about him before on this podcast, and I've opened that I wasn't the biggest fan of what he could provide for your fantasy team. You know, probably a solid real-life infielder, but what he can provide is that multi-position availability, especially if you're in a daily league, like many of my leagues are. That helps a lot because that gives you more of a chance to not have to miss out on production from a certain lineup spot.
Exactly. Yeah, and in his over the last 3 weeks, he's hit 4 of those home runs, and he's hitting .309. So he's been hot, and this is one of those people. Perhaps this is the week you want to get on the Joey Ortiz train. He could slow down, you know. But the other hand is he might not be available if he keeps it up. So someone to look at. Actually, I'm going to look up in Yahoo.
Well, and you know, while you're doing that, remember that the question with Ortiz comes with how much power does he bring you?
Yes,
exactly. You know, I don't personally see it as I see it as below average game power, not like nothing, obviously, but you know, I'd call it fringe average.
I would agree.
Game power, and it helps that he got away from Baltimore because there was just a massive logjam, and he was going to find himself on the wrong end of it. I mean, just look at what Jordan Westberg's doing and tell me where Joey Ortiz was going to fit in. So it's good that he got traded, and it's good he's getting this chance because he can show us maybe he does have that power. And like you said, he's been on a power tear recently. He's
44% rostered in Yahoo leagues. So creeping up toward the 50% mark, and they have him eligible for second and third base. So there you have it. But yeah, so the last month he's been pretty good, and you'd want to see that power, but he'd probably help you with average at the very least if he stays hot. So a hitter to take a look at, as we've been talking about so many pitchers.
Well, you know who's been having power lately, Nate? CJ Abrams.
He has, yes.
And by lately, I just kind of mean this season. He's well on pace to break his home run total from last season. So if you remember, CJ Abrams got drafted again by the Padres. And he was a high school shortstop, supposed to have power, supposed to have speed. And
the power he hit. Well, I can't remember how many home runs last year. I want to say it was 18.
It is. Yeah, I'm looking at it right here.
18 in about 150 games. And now he's already at 9 home runs. So he's on pace to break that 18 number. And now you're getting into a place where, I don't know. I mean, he could be a 2020 guy.
Yeah, the speed is there, no doubt. The opportunity is there with Washington. And he's young, too. He's another guy who debuted at 21 with the Padres. So he's probably putting it all together. I think this is a guy who has a very high ceiling, as we're talking about ceilings and potential.
Yep.
Definite tools and maybe this power is here to stay.
Just so you know, Nate, I know this has nothing to do with what we've talked about. We've talked about the Padres' 2018 first-round pick who they've traded and their 2019 first-round pick who they've traded on just this podcast episode.
That is odd. These patterns that just pop up are interesting. We didn't.
You think that would come with the Mets?
Yes.
I'm talking about Jared Kelnick and Pete Crow Armstrong.
Excuse me. Yeah, that's funny. He's fast and he can hit. And if the power's there, yeah, he could be a fantasy. He's almost like an Acuna light, you know. He could be a fantasy stud.
Yeah, because again, I mean, even last year, it's not like he wasn't helpful. He had 18 home runs and stole all of the bases, if I remember correctly. I don't think there was a single base unstolen by the end of last year. 47 stolen bases, only got caught 4 times.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's fast. I don't know if you know about that speed, but he's fast.
He is very fast.
Justin Martinez. Nate, just a very quick change of pace here. You said, do you know who Justin Martinez is? And I said, no. So can you tell us about Justin Martinez?
I can. So back to another pitcher. He's with the Diamondbacks. He has a label on him, and the label is future stud closer. So this is projecting a bit down the road, dynasty league, maybe not a redraft, but he's been interesting. But he has a big fastball, also has a nice slider and changeup, but this season he's been electric. So the Diamondbacks called him up, and this so far he has, let's see, he's pitched in 13 games. He has a 0.59 ERA and a 1.23 whip. The issues that he has had are control related, and that's the question mark with him. His walk rate is not great, and he seems like someone who's going to be a reliever just with his talent and his tools. But anyways, my point is, if you're looking for a reliever and you are trying to figure out who could that next stud closer be, he's someone down the road I think could definitely succeed, maybe in Arizona or elsewhere as the closer, and he has a lot of raw talent.
Can I tell you who that description that you just made, who it reminds me of? You're not going to like it.
Uh-oh. Okay, let's hear it.
That was how Joe Jimenez was talked about coming up with Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
It's also how many successful closers were talked about. Don't get me wrong. But I just remember saying those very similar things about Joe Jimenez when he was coming up with Detroit.
Yeah. Well, that's why baseball is fun, right?
Yeah. Right. Anything can happen. So, yeah, it's always good to try to find those early, you know, reliever help early on. I mean, if you were early on the Orion Kirkering train, or really any reliever like that, I mean, I guess Detroit's full of them with Jason Foley, Alex Lang. Over the last few years, they just always seem to have this next one. But if you can find those guys early, there's value there for sure.
And even this year, I mean, he'd help you with ratios. He hasn't pitched a ton in high leverage spots, mm-hmm. but he strikes people out. He's got crazy velocity. And so I'm just looking down the road at someone to maybe hold on to that could become a closer someday. If you can get those control issues under control, no pun intended.
See what you did there?
He's someone that's interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why. So, again, take a look at Justin Martinez. I mean, those high-octane guys, man, they can be a lot of fun. And again, they can help you. Like you mentioned, you may not be high leverage right now. Could be by the end of the year, potentially, just to maybe. You never know. Nate, one thing that I want to talk about, because I just saw a tweet almost right before we went on, and I thought it was kind of interesting. In Chicago, with the White Sox at the catcher mm-hmm. position, Martin Maldonado is 37 years old. He's hitting below 100, and he's still getting regular at bats. And I understand his value has never been his bat. I do. I fully get that. But at what point do you look at yourself and say, hey, we are the Chicago White Sox. We're at the bottom of the AL Central, and we have, you know, our record is 15-40, which is not good. At what point do they go, all right, let's give Corey Lee some extra run. Let's try to get Edgar Cuero up here. I mean, I get your value with Martin Maldonado, but you'd think his value would be better suited where he was in Houston for a lot of years, or with some contender who needs that kind of veteran leadership, or that that guy who can handle a pitching staff really well and play really good defense.
Yeah, you're right.
But at what point do they stop and just say, hey, we got to get some of our young guys some at-bats? We're not winning.
Yeah, and with him, it's interesting that what you said about playing a role like he did in Houston, or even, you know, a backup role on a good team, just with the veteran leadership angle. But the White Sox, I don't think they probably could get much in return for him. But if they were to cut him loose, he probably would latch on somewhere else just because of what we were just talking about. But, man, those numbers are brutal. And
You can even have him do that backup veteran mentorship role with Corey Lee and let Corey Lee at bat every day.
Good point. They could keep him around and just, to help out the youngsters. But that is surprising. We talked about this early on in the podcast. It was going to be a bad long season for White Sox fans, and it's playing out right how we thought it would.
Well, and I mean, I guess Corey Lee's getting more at bats. He has 109 at bats versus Martin Maldonado's 84. But Corey Lee is also hitting .275, and Maldonado's hitting .83. The bat numbers are too close for that to be the comparison we're making right now.
.83. Man, that's that's bad.
And again, I'm not here expecting him to hit. No one's ever expected Martin Maldonado to be a good hitter and to help you on the offensive side of the baseball. But I guess my big issue is, where's your team at, and what exactly is Martin Maldonado doing for you?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Eric Fetty has been good as a pitcher for the White Sox. That's about all I can think of.
Eric Crochet?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about him. So maybe.
And they did just call the Strini back up, too. He didn't do well, but they called the Strini back up.
So maybe he's helping out the pitchers, but.
But he doesn't have to hit to do that.
Right. Yeah, true. And don't pick him up in fantasy.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And again, Martin Maldonado is a phenomenal baseball player, and he is so, so good at what he does. But it's just, I think, and this is pure conjecture. I haven't been hired by a professional baseball team. I don't run a professional baseball team. If I were working for a professional baseball team, I would want to get my young guys as many at bats as possible. If I were in a situation where I'm going to have the worst record in the league, probably.
Right.
Their winning percentage is under 300.
It's a it's a lost season for them. So why not get your young guys talent and some are young guys at bats. Sometimes too, you're just auditioning them because maybe you're trying to move them for a different piece. Right. So
yeah,
teams aren't going to know what you have until they do get those at bats.
So I don't know. It seems odd. Like I would love to see what Corey Lee has, because Corey Lee could be Chicago's catcher of the future. I think that's going to be Edgar Cuero, but it could be Corey Lee, and he's up right now. Edgar Cuero's in Double A. You don't know if you're giving half of the at bats to somebody who's hitting under 100
and is 37 years old.
And again, he has so much value. He's really good at what he does. I really don't mean this to sound like a negative Martin Maldonado's bad rant. This is a White Sox rant, 100% a White Sox rant. What are they doing? I don't get it. I don't understand. And the reason that I'm saying I don't understand, because I think we talk about this a lot. And I talk about unexpected starting pitching a lot. Like, at what point do you just go, all right, let's see what we got in the young guys?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to. You have to.
Yeah, I agree.
And maybe you don't have to. They obviously aren't. But in my head, you have to. All right, let's end on a good note. I'm going to stick with catchers. Let's end on a good note. If I don't look at the notes if you haven't already, or forget what I told you before we went on. If I were to have you guess what catcher is on a ridiculous hit streak right now, I think it's 16 games. What catcher is it?
Will Smith with the Dodgers.
Mm-mm. I love making Nate guess stuff, by the way. Like, become one of my favorite bits of this entire podcast.
Catchers are so hard, and like, you only know a few of them.
I'll give you a hint. It's the exact one you probably think it is. It's JT Realmuto.
Oh, yeah, there. Another one of the other few talented catchers that would come to mind. I just didn't think of him.
Yeah, I heard him described as just a robot who was built just to play baseball, and it's kind of true. Or maybe because what can't he do?
That's funny. Yeah, he's good.
He's a catcher. He's fast. He's got an insane, I think the fastest pop time in the majors if no one's dethroned him. I mean, it's nuts what he can do on a baseball field.
I was just actually looking up how many steals does he have now that you said who it is. Oh, he only has one this year.
What? Oh, cut him. From all your fantasy teams, cut him. Get him out of here.
The steals that he adds, the added value, he is a great baseball player.
Well, one steal from the catcher position, you're already net positive. Let's be real about the situation.
True. And so he's on a 16-game hitting streak. That's pretty impressive. The Phillies are tough.
Because their pitching staff is, I don't think even arguably at this point, the best in the league. And it's getting the gap is closing, don't get me wrong. But part of what I do when I fill out the expected starting pitching is I filter just starters and look at the team stats so I can look at just trends for that staff as a whole.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Phillies are just so far above everybody. They were still, I think, over one war, F4, Fangraphs war, better than the next best pitching staff heading into this week. It's crazy. It's also crazy on the other end because the Rockies are basically on the bottom of everything, but the Phillies are like way up there.
Yeah. I mean, the Phillies, they're obviously kind of a World Series or bust. I mean, they're composed and structured. They want to win. It's actually hard not to like them, I would say, as a baseball fan.
It was hard not to like them during the last time their window was open, when it was Ryan Howard and Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins and Roy Halladay, Cole Hamels, Cliff Lee.
You're right. Yeah, that was
Jason Worth. Man, I can even just keep rattling off the names of that team.
Remember the Flying Hawaiian, Shane Victorino? Shane Victorino.
Yeah, he was recently, I don't know how recently, but he appeared for the Savannah Bananas at one point.
Oh, really?
And got a hit. Like, it was
that's
whatever. Funny. But yeah, it seems like they just have these windows of insane baseball. And they had one back in the 2008, and then it all kind of crumbled. And they're having one right now with Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto and Kyle Schwarber. And
the window is open right now.
Yeah. Bryson Stott. And of course, the pitching, obviously, Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola is a pretty good one, too, to have.
And Kirkering, who we're talking about, is he still on the Phillies or did they trade him?
No, he's still on the Phillies. He's just in the bullpen.
Yeah,
But yeah, the Phillies are a good team. I still don't. I'll be honest. The team I'm most scared of is the Yankees.
Yeah, I can see that.
Their pitching. They don't have Gerrit Cole, but their pitching staff has been really solid. Carlos Rodon has his velo back up, and he's back to being really, really good. Carlos Rodon. You got to go through a lineup that where you have to face Judge and Soto.
Judge has been good. Yeah, and you know, well, the Phillies also, but the Yankees won't be scared to make moves at the trade deadline and get even better. You know.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, Dombrowski and Philly will probably trade some prospects, but like I almost would expect Justin Crawford to be on the move for somebody who's going to help them win the World Series, which would be interesting.
That could be our World Series pick right there. Yankees could have.
Yeah. Oh, God. That would be. You can just stack it up where you have Judge, Rizzo, Soto, and if somebody wants to try to play lefty righty, they're going to have at least one cherry bomb in there.
And if they can keep Stanton taped or glued together, you know, he hits the ball. He's like the hardest hitting baseball player of all time.
Yeah. You're
like StatCast era, like top 10 of the hits or whatever. It's crazy. Look that up sometime. He has like all of them.
Well, you know, we're over time, but that just is such an interesting conversation too, because of what he can do. Like he starts closed off, and if somebody wants to imitate that and try to hit, they're not going to be able to. Just like back in the day, if somebody wanted to imitate Gary Sheffield, they're not going to be able to hit because there's just the guys who can set up that way and have that kind of iconic thing. They have that thing in their swing that makes it impossible to replicate because nobody else has it. Like Gary Sheffield had some of the fastest hands probably ever in the history of the game.
Yeah.
So he can be in any position with his little wave and bat, and he can get his hands in the position and through quicker than anyone.
I heard an interview with him recently. He was talking about that and he added that in. Like he was already doing pretty good. I don't remember what he said why when he added the wiggle, but he was great baseball player.
But you go back and look, and honestly, that was before my time when I knew what I was looking at. I watched Gary Sheffield and I imitated him growing up, but like I didn't know what made him good until somebody said, hey, like what made Gary Sheffield good? And I went back and looked, and I'm like, those hands.
Yeah.
How do you physically move your hands that fast?
I mean, the only other guy I can think of like that is Barry Bonds.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And so Stanton obviously has... Well, Stan's got pretty quick hands, too, if I'm not mistaken, because he starts closed off, and he's got to get to that high inside pitch, because that's where you think they'd throw him, is just throw him triple digits high and inside. He's going to get there, and he's going to crush it.
Yeah, it's with him, it's just the injuries. So
yeah,
let's knock on wood, keep it positive here. Let's hope there's no more injuries.
If you're wondering how all the sticky tack places are still in business, it's probably just, as Nate said, holding Giancarlo Stanton together. There you go. Oh my gosh. I you know, we poke fun, but when Giancarlo Stanton's healthy, it's good for baseball because he just mashes.
It is.
He just mashes. So we don't mean that negatively, Giancarlo, if you're listening. We're glad you're healthy. Stay healthy. And for the rest of you, we're glad you're listening. Thank you so much. We will obviously have more episodes of Coffee Talk coming up. I'm just going to plug it one more time because it's the coolest episode we have so far. Make sure to listen to that episode where we interviewed with Pat Vendetti. That is a couple episodes back at this point. But appreciate you listening. We'll have more coming up. Nate, as always, thank you. Make sure to follow him at Nathaniel Kosher on Twitter. You can follow me at Huth Trevor on Twitter. You can follow our podcast at Coffee Talk PL on Twitter. And of course, Coffee Talk is part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. We thank you for listening, because here at Coffee Talk, we are always ready for that next cup of coffee.